Depay is playing so badly, he's making Ashley Young look good.
Probably finish fifth. You know, everyone will get, I don't know, herpes the last day of the season or whatever, and they won't be able to play or win.
I think Swansea are a club where you can go with them and kind of, you know, start again, if you know what I mean. People like Shelby, Wayne Routledge.
Also on Twitter, you can find us on FFP_11. Follow us, talk to us, let us know what you think, and we will try and get any of your comments and questions on the next week's Honest Week's Pod. Right, so let's introduce our panel this week. This week we have a debutant, our Manchester United supporter, Andrew. How you doing, my friend?
I'm well, thank you. How you doing?
I'm good, my friend. First pod, nervous? Sweaty palms?
Slightly, but I've got an old teammate on my left, so I'm all right. Yeah.
I'll look after you.
We're going to talk United and Rooney a bit later on. We're going to come back to you in a second, introduce the rest of our panel members. Our Arsenal fan, Natasha, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. It's your birthday this week, so hopefully Arsenal can deliver the ultimate present for you.
It would be nice if we did get a nice 3-1 win over Spurs on Sunday. I'd take that and be very happy.
Sure you would. And speaking of Tottenham, our Tottenham supporter, Ollie, how are you, my friend?
I'm very good. How are you, Jordan?
I'm good. Good result for you last night.
I can't believe Natasha wants us to actually score a goal.
Well, do you know what? I'd rather you scored just the one than
what,
two.
Before Arsenal, or an equaliser, or a consolation?
It'd actually be nice for you lot to be leading, us to come back and batter you. That's always pleasurable.
Okay.
That's always pleasurable.
Andrew, let's start with you now. Manchester United struggling to score some goals but getting results week by week. Give us your assessment of the season so far and what your expectations are for your club.
It's boring. Very boring. You know, it's very unlike United to go into a game and not create many chances, especially at home. I mean, just summing up, in a derby game I saw against City, you expect a bit of excitement, a bit of bite. You know, you expect that kind of game for when we need to actually show up and actually, you know, kind of show what he's about. And we didn't see it. And it's been a sort of recurring theme, especially at home all season.
Okay, yeah, sorry. And what are your expectations for this season? What do you as a fan constitute as a successful season?
For us, it's about, I'll say, third. You know, last season was all about getting into the top four, getting back into the Champions League. Now it's a case of just being in the mix again. You know, if we can still be thereabouts towards the end of the season, next to City and Arsenal, I'll take that, because you know we are a long way off from winning the title.
Does it matter how you get third, or do you expect? Would you accept a title challenge where you finished third?
I mean, obviously, you know, if we could still be in the mix towards the end of the season and we actually are within a chance of actually possibly winning the title, I'll take that. But for us, it's about just literally just staying in that sort of position now. If we can just be a few points thereabouts from City and Arsenal, I'll take that.
And does the fact that your team isn't playing with the kind of, as you mentioned there, the kind of swag and style and the attacking flair that we're used to, does that concern you? Or are you one of those fans that you don't really care as long as you're in the mix? If what he's doing right now with your team keeps you in that title race, you know, March, April time, you will take that?
It is a concern, because it's very unlike United to go into games where we're struggling to create chances. You know, I mean, of course, when you win titles, when you win ugly and you win 1-0, every fan takes that. But when you're not at the top of your game, you expect your team to actually show a bit more bite and a bit more attack and flair.
Okay, all right. Watford and Leicester going about their business kind of quietly this season so far. I'm personally not quite convinced by Leicester even still, but Watford are doing, they seem to be quite solid and getting some good results. So what's your assessment of those two teams in particular so far?
Well, I think that Watford have, they have got, the last two results have been pretty impressive. Going to Stoke and winning 2-0, it's never easy there. And then winning against West Ham. Although we've talked about West Ham in the past, and West Ham have got that in their locker, haven't they? They seem to raise their game for the big teams, and then when they play the teams that they probably expect to win, then they put in a duff performance. And I'm sure that when they turn up at White Hart Lane a week on Sunday, then they'll be back to form again. They'll be playing like their lives depend on it. But you know, against Watford, they turned in a duff performance. But yeah, Watford have done well, and Flores is a good manager, and I think he's one of those managers who comes to the Premier League and he's got, I wouldn't say it's not like a chip on his shoulder, but I think he feels like he's got something to prove, you know. He's kind of been around in Spain and he's done well there, and you know, managed some of the top clubs there outside of Real Madrid and Barcelona. But yeah, he's done well, and he's kind of come here and he obviously wants, a bit like Ronald Koeman, I think, he's come here and he wants to pit his wits and show, yeah, I can hack it in this league. And they've gone against, the other thing about Watford is they've kind of gone against what the perceived wisdom is about how you can survive in the Premier League, because if you remember in the summer they bought a lot of players, didn't they? And a lot of people kind of think, oh well, that's a recipe for disaster. But they've actually gelled really quickly, and not only have they gelled really quickly, but they've actually made Etienne Capoue look like he can play. And that's incredible, because you know, when I watched him last season, he didn't seem to have a clue how to play football. But this season he's sticking to his job and he's doing a good job, and Saturday should be a good game. You know, I'm interested in that game because you know, they're two sort of surprise packages.
Less so for Watford, but with Leicester, finishing fourth bottom this season still constitute a good season
for Leicester?
Yeah,
well, it's not going to happen, is it?
Well, the point I'm making is that if they stay in the league, which was their objective,
of course, yeah, of course,
is that, would they take,
of course, right, what now? if they drop like a stone, you mean, and they ended up fourth bottom, are we talking about them finishing there after the start that they've had, or,
well, the start of the season they would have taken fourth bottom?
Yeah, of course, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I'm saying, if you offer a Leicester fan now fourth,
yeah,
bottom, would they take that, or would they expect,
I think any team now, any team is in the Premier League, as long as they stay in the Premier League for next season when the big money comes in, they'll be happy. But I think that given the start that they've had, Leicester fans will probably be disappointed. And they've played really well. I think they've played well, and I like the way they play. I like the fact that even when the other day they're up against Pulis's side, who are always known to defend well, when they're a goal down at half-time, they haven't played well, and then they turn it around and they win 3-1. That's impressive. I think that's quite impressive for a team like Leicester, who last season were battling against relegation. Now they don't know when they're beat.
Natasha, bearing in mind the injuries that Arsenal have acquired in the last couple of weeks, Bayern Munich this week, the Champions League, and Tottenham on Sunday, also factoring where Arsenal are at the Champions League in their group, and it's looking a bit precarious, where they are in the Premier League.
A little bit.
Looking good in the Premier League. Would you think it's a good idea to rest three or four key players for the game on Sunday?
Only if you want to riot on your hands. I'm not saying it wouldn't be a good idea, but while there's still a possibility that we can get through to the next round, then we have to go with our best team. Like, for me, I know, obviously, the League Cup, but for years we've been playing kids and debutants in the League Cup, so I wasn't expecting him to put out a first team like Mourinho did and then get battered anyway, by the way. But I think while there's still an opportunity that we can still qualify, then I think we have to play our best players. I don't see the point of not, because then you're effectively saying we're already out of this competition, you're giving up before you have to. And what does that say about the ambition that we suddenly just found in Arsenal? Yeah, but they could trip over a kid's toy at home and break their ankle. Do you know what I mean? Things, you know, I know it's Arsenal, so there's always that, oh God, that extra 10% of nerves regarding injuries. But they could just as easily fall down the stairs while they go and get the door. So I'm not about what ifs and what ifs. I'm like, go for it now, innit? Live fast, die young.
Okay, nice one. All right, let's get into it now then. I am a big fan of Gary Monk. But he's struggling. His form's been a bit indifferent the last month or so. Start with you, Andrew. Is he all that?
I'm a fan of Gary Monk as well. And I think it's just quite unfortunate that, you know, it's now his turn to get all the flack from the press and from fans, you know. But I think he's the sort of manager that, if you give him time, they'll get by. Swansea have got a good squad, got some good players, they've got two strikers that can actually score goals. So I think they can turn it around.
Ollie, do you think he's a good young manager, or do you think he just had a bit of a honeymoon period and now we're kind of seeing the real Gary Monk?
No, I think he's, if I'm honest, he's surprised. I thought, I didn't think he would last the pace.
Did you think they were just being lazy by giving him the job because he was already there? Yeah. He already knows.
And I just he didn't look like he just, you know, when you see players, you've seen people who've played the game and then they're managers and you think, nah, you just don't look right. You know what I mean?
Like John Barnes.
But, you know, yeah, exactly. But I think he's done a good job and he's grown into the role. And I think Swansea play good football. They got decent players. They buy well as well. They don't buy bad players, you know. They buy players who can come in and do a job. They always seem to know Swansea. They want players for specific roles. They're not like, they don't go for the scattergun approach like Spurs do, like buy this one, buy that one. Do you know what I mean?
And then
hope that someone comes good. You know, you get the impression with Swansea, they buy players for specific roles. Montero's come in and done a good job. I mean, I know he's a bit in and out, but and Sigurdsson's done a job for them. Gomez, you know, they bought Gomez in before. They knew Bonny was on his way, didn't they? So he brought Gomez in, and Gomez was kind of, he was kicking up, wasn't he? He was kicking up for quite a while that, oh, I'm not getting enough games and I want to leave and all the rest of it. But Monk was just like, you know, just hang on. And then they lost Bonny to Man City, and Gomez has, you know, he's piped down since then, hasn't he? So there's strategy there. They definitely kind of, you know, they know what they're doing, and they've kind of, you know, they've brought Shelvey in when Liverpool didn't want him anymore. So, yeah, I think he's done a good job. He's brought in good players. When they've had to go out and buy, he's gone out and bought players that have come in and done a job. I think AU's proved to be a good signing. And he's, you know, he's impressed in the first few weeks. I know they've fallen away. But, yeah, the results haven't been great recently. But then I think you're always going to get that with a team like Swansea. A team like Swansea are going to have bursts of really good results. And then they're going to kind of fall back a little way, you know. That's just the way it goes.
Tasha, what do you think his strengths are? What is it about him that you think? Because you don't really hear a lot about Gary Monk.
I think that's one of his strengths, is the fact that you don't hear a lot about Gary Monk. He's not caught in the limelight. He's not showy or flashy like some other managers that we see. Brendan Rodgers. We all know how I feel about him and his camera obsession. Yeah. But no, I think... And more importantly, Gary Monk seems to understand the ethos of the club, as we've seen with Koeman at Southampton and Pochettino when he was there as well. Understanding what the owners and the people within the club want to do makes his life easier. So when he's looking for players, of course they've got their little committee and there'll be suggestions, but he knows if he's suggesting a player, he knows the type of player that they'll be looking at. So he's going to suggest someone that's realistic rather than saying, let's go buy Messi, you know, or let's go and buy, I don't know, Yunus Kabul, for example. So because just bringing out the shade today. No, I think he gets the club, and I think the players seem to like him. Like hearing AU talk and Shelvey, he's taken chances on people, because both Shelvey and AU were at crossroads in their career, and I think they have respect for him as a person, as a manager. And I think, you know, yeah, they've had their little dip now, but there's no question that they're not playing for their manager. They're just having a bad run.
It's a little dip. And I think Swansea are a club where you can go with them and kind of, you know, start again, if you know what I mean. People like Shelvey, Wayne Routledge previously. Who's the other
they've
one?
They've got a good team. Sigurdsson, you know.
Sigurdsson as well. Who's
it's
Spurs,
not that anyone's not performing, because they're not putting in really... It's not like, oh my God, they're really bad.
Well, but by all accounts, they were the better team in the first half, and Gomez should have, against Arsenal, and Gomez should have put Arsenal, Swansea in front.
Yeah.
It would have been a different game if Swansea had scored.
It's just bad luck sometimes, isn't it? I think clubs that size, those mid-table clubs, you know, the ones that want to go on a cup run or get to Europa League, they're always going to have 10 games in the season where they're not at their best. It's about minimising the damage those games do. So rather than losing 3-0, you want to try and lose 1-0 because your goals count. Or if you can get the draw, then that's better than getting the loss.
I mean, picking up on Andrew's point as well, you know, there's other players as well. I just thought about more when you think of Fabianski.
Yeah.
Okay. Probably Arsenal's too big a club for Fabianski, but he's gone there and rebuilt his career. And no one talks about Fabianski now as, you know, a calamity keeper. They just think, well, he's doing a good job. There's no question marks every week. You don't see the pundits going, oh, Fabianski might throw one in or something like that.
Flappy Hansky.
You know, I had a record last year for the most clean sheets
records. Yeah, no, I think he did. Yeah. I think you're right. But I think, you know, he's another one who's gone and rebuilt his career under Monk. And another one is Carl Norton. Couldn't do anything right at Spurs. Yeah. Couldn't do anything right. I felt sorry for the guy, you know, because he tried. But again, he just wasn't... Whenever anything went wrong, he always got the blame for it. And, you know, he, don't get me wrong, there were some where he was terribly at fault. But still, he's gone to Swansea. And again, he's gone in there and he's fitted in. So, you know, Monk needs to be given, should be given... respect and credit for that he's kind of taken those players and helped them rebuild their careers.
His first big call was to get rid of Michu, who the year before
exactly was the hot boy.
I couldn't understand why he didn't try to reintegrate Michu into the team, but it seems like where's Michu now?
I definitely think at clubs like that where you are a small squad and you know you maybe don't, you're not an Arsenal, Man United, Chelsea, the dressing room is so important. Because if you're Swansea and you get five players who are not happy, that will just grow, and they can't afford for that many players not to be happy. So it's probably better that he didn't get Michu back and keep him there, and he's infecting, whispering in people's ears. Do you know what I mean? We're hearing that's going on at Chelsea now. So, you know, it's really important, I think, that they've got this good team spirit and this ethos. And I don't think there's no worrying noises coming out of Swansea. You're not hearing anyone saying, is he going to lose his job? If you're hearing it, it's people like us sitting, talking about it. But you're not really hearing an unknown sources saying...
Well, Swansea aren't that kind of club either, are
they? No, but that's what I mean. It's good. And that's why people like them, Southampton, will have that stability. They don't need to worry about being in the Premier League next year because they've sorted their house. They've got... Their house is on solid... bricks and concrete, isn't it? Rather than someone like, you know, a QPR who you're always waiting for the next drama.
Andrew, do you feel he has to either win a cup or come top six, top five to get a job in the next bracket up of clubs? Is Swansea as good as it gets for someone like
that? Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know. I think he's the sort of man that can just go about doing his job for... I mean, obviously, in this day and age, you know, managers don't get a chance to stay at a club and build a project for, you know, 3-4 years, you know, because I mean, straight away after half a season, you know, everyone gets cold feet and want to start sort of calling for his name. I mean, Swansea have won a trophy in the last couple of years. I think it was under, was it Loudrop who delivered for them?
All right, it's your time now, Andrew. We're going to get on to Rooney. I have been listening to a lot of journalists and ex-pundits and ex-players talk about Rooney and United, and I don't think I've heard one pundit or journal or ex-footballer basically say what I'm hearing the vast majority of football fans and even United fans now saying, which is, drop Rooney. Why is Rooney still playing? And as a Man United fan, first of all, what do you make of his form? And secondly, why do you think people in the media are so scared to say what we can quite all clearly see?
He's England's golden boy. He's England's record goal scorer.
Yeah.
You know, so there's people in the media who are almost sort of too scared to call him out, which I don't agree with. You know, he's been shown up at United by Anthony Martial, a young, fresh-faced French kid that's come in and done the job, and he's done what Rooney should be doing. You know, Rooney should be taking the lead as a captain and showing the younger players the way. But at the moment, if I'm picking my strongest 11, he doesn't fit. I'll drop him. And it also may benefit him. I think he needs time out from the front line to just sort of gather his thoughts and then kind of go again.
That won't take long, will it? Sorry.
Ollie, first of all, as a non-United fan, is he the problem or is United the problem? Or is Louis van Gaal the problem? Is he a scapegoat for what's going wrong there, or is he literally their worst player?
I mean, I can't say I watch United every week, so I can't say. But, you know, well, I mean, that's the other thing because, you know,
unless you're really tired,
yeah,
and you can't sleep.
These nil-nil draws are too much for me. But yeah, I some of me thinks that there's stuff going on at Man United and Rooney's being made scapegoat. I do think that he hasn't started the season well. I totally accept that. But I also think that he's being made the scapegoat for the fact that United aren't really creating chances. They're not playing very well. They don't look convincing even when they win. Yeah. And, you know, and he's suffered because of that. And, yes, Martial has come in and done a job whenever he's come in the team. But you have to ask questions about how, you know, some of the goals that he scored, like the first one he scored against his opening goal against Liverpool, you know, he kind of scored that out of nothing, you know what I mean? And that's, you're asking, you're essentially, the way Man United are playing at the moment, they're asking their forwards to score goals out of nothing. Yeah. Do some magic, because we ain't going to create anything for you. So, you know, you've got to create something. And that whole business the other day with Paul Scholes, there's something wrong there, something's gone on there, because you think about it and you think, hold on a minute, Scholes is mates with Giggs. Giggs is supposed to be the you know, the assistant.
Yeah, right-hand man.
Surely,
yeah.
As Van Gaal said in that press conference, surely if you've got an issue with what's going on, you would channel it through Giggs to the manager. You don't need to go and talk to the media. What's he talking to the media about it for? Surely if you're Man United, should be keeping that all in-house. And I just think that there's something... I wonder whether he's the stalking horse who's been put out there, and, you know, it's part of...
A little bit like the Carragher Gerrard.
Yeah. And maybe he's basically the mouthpiece, but Giggs is kind of thinking the same thing as well.
Well, it was like with Rio, you know? Under Moyes, wasn't it? Little things coming out of Man, and we all knew it was coming from Rio. Like,
I just feel there's more to that than Scholes just speaking his mind, basically.
But he's the only one, you know. I think today Peter Schmeichel said that.
Andrei Kanchelskis was
in
the
there's been
today.
Former players. Who've...
Where's he been?
No.
I mean, seriously.
I didn't even know what he looks like now.
And you kind of through the years, they pop up here and there. Literally, since he's retired, I have not...
You remember anything? Last thing I saw, he was in a blue shirt of Everton, and then he just disappeared off a cliff. It's like, and he appeared out of nowhere. Oh, yeah, Van Gaal's football's boring. I mean, that maybe they're just really trying to, you know, stick the knife into Van Gaal. It's like that's the ultimate disrespect. You know what I mean? When someone from way back when comes out of nowhere and says, yeah, even Andre Kanchelski says the football's boring. But yeah, I just think there's something not right there, and I think I think Rooney's definitely being made the scapegoat to some extent. Of, you know, the fact that they're not playing very good football, and Rooney isn't that player he was back in 2004, where he kind of picked the ball up and go past a few players. You know, he's not that player anymore. He can't play like that.
You say that, but what I'm hearing from a lot of the pundits is that he's not creating chances, he's not getting shots off. That's fine, strikers, that can happen to strikers. But what I'm seeing is worse. It's just the basics. He can't control the ball. He's missing 20-yard square passes. He's not the one-on-one against Palace on Saturday.
Yeah, that chance, yeah.
What was that? Yeah. That's nothing to do with tactics or Manchester United. That's just a player that's clearly on poor form. So on his personal form, is it an isolated problem whereby he shouldn't be playing, or do you feel there's bigger forces that...
I think it's a bit of both. I think that he's not... I'm not... You know, don't get me wrong. We've talked about this before, haven't we, Tasha? Yeah. And we've both said Rooney is not... You know, we started the season saying Rooney doesn't look... He looks completely out of sorts.
His confidence
and Tasha,
is Tasha's shot.
Always... I remember you saying a couple of times that, you know, he's come back from the summer looking out of shape.
And
it's almost like... It's almost like he needs to go on a boot camp or something. They need to just say... You know, yeah, you need to sharpen up, mate. You know what I mean? It's like, and I think that it didn't help him as well. Maybe it didn't help him that they didn't go out there and sign a player. I know they were talking about Kane or whatever, but they didn't go out and sign Plo. They didn't, exactly. They didn't go and get Martial until right at the end of the window. When actually, if he'd been given something from the get-go, we've brought this guy in, right? And give him something to think about. Maybe it would have, you know, it would have put something in his head. You know what? I got to fix up here. You know what I mean? But the fact that he kind of started the season in the team, he's probably been a bit complacent, and he needed a bit of a... He needs a jolt. He needs a jolt of, like, actually, you're not going to play. And maybe he needs to be taken out of the firing line. But I don't think he's the only problem at Man United. I think the way that they're
he's
playing...
He's the biggest one.
If you're
going to play one centre forward in this formation, who are you going to pick, Rooney or Martial?
I agree with that. But then, having said that, look at the team. Look, it's not just about Rooney. Look at the four around.
It's so
the,
look at, slow.
Look at the four. I mean, Depay has been dreadful. Depay is dreadful, right? I think he's not a good player.
We're only
he's
saying
he
that now
post
injury to Luke Shaw. beforehand we said, oh, that bromance on left hand side, Shaw and Depay.
I wasn't saying that. Every time I watch Depay, I'm like, really? How much is he buying for? How much is he selling?
25.
That's a lot of money for that boy, I'm telling you.
Sure, to make you look good.
I'm just saying, at the time, everyone was saying, oh, he's a good.
That's a lot of money for that boy. I got to say, he doesn't look a player to me. Mata has played well, but he keeps getting played out of position.
But Mata, you can see with Mata, he's got a brain. You can see he's thinking about, he's trying to create something. But there's no one there.
But don't you think that the problem is, well, that he's been played out of position all season? He's playing on the right when he should be playing in. Well, no one else is playing 10. He seems to. Van Gaal keeps playing everyone else at number 10 except Mata. And Mata is the obvious person to play there. Mm-hmm. I don't really understand why Mata's playing on the right. I don't understand why Depay is playing so badly, he's making Ashley Young look good. Seriously, that's so, you know, you've got all the players around.
Marvin's going to hurt you for
then,
that.
And then you've got like different number 10s all the time. So I think that, yeah, Rooney's not playing well, but then I don't think any of your attacking players are playing that well, you know, and I don't think that helps.
This might not be a factor, but is it a factor though that he's the captain, he's the experienced?
I was going to say that, yeah.
He shouldn't be the captain, really.
Well, no.
I don't think he should be.
So should we be judging Rooney on a different level to say Depay, who I agree has been, I call him the poo, like he's been really, really poor. But he's on $300,000 a week, he's the captain. Should we be judging Rooney on a different standard to Depay?
Well, yeah, we should, but... Well, I wouldn't make him captain, but yeah, you're right. He's a captain, he should be leading by example, but yeah, he's not... Listen, the question isn't whether he's...
You think if Van Gaal...
I don't. The question isn't for me. Oh yeah, you know he's not playing well. He's definitely not playing well. There's no doubt about that. There's no question about it. Anyone who says he is fooling themselves. He's not playing well. But then I don't think any of the attacking players at United have got are playing well. The results bear that out. The result, you know, they can't score a goal. So
that
the results
on target in the Manchester derby was like 70 something minutes. Like, obviously I'm an Arsenal fan, but Man U was always a team I could watch and think, yeah, they play good football and respect that. They just look so boring.
Do you think if he was foreign that he would get the same protection from the media?
Hell no. Don't get me wrong, there are players they like. I think that's just general. There's players that fans like who, you know, don't get as much grief as others. But
you agree with Andrew that?
Yeah. He's England captain. So if you start digging out Wayne Rooney, Manchester United player, you're also digging out Wayne Rooney, England captain. It's a double-edged sword. I've seen people writing that he should be rested. No, let's keep it real. He should be dropped. He has been awful. It's not about rest. Yes, he may need some rest, but whether or not, it's not because he's tired. It's because his form has gone. His confidence is gone. He needs Falcao's muscular injury that will see him disappear for a month, and he might come back and look better and feel better. But I don't. If it doesn't get sorted by Christmas, he's going to have an awful season.
I think it's more than that now. That's the first 6 weeks.
Yeah, but I'm saying if we get to Christmas...
He's making like 10-yard passes. He's missing his player. He can't trap a ball. These are just basic. You can be unfit. You can trap a ball.
Do you think he's lost? I think he feels a little bit lost. Yeah. I think Van Gaal's probably just said to him, go do your thing. And he needs more direction than that. You know, someone like Mata, you can say, go do your thing. People like Santi Cazorla, you can say that too. But some players do need a bit more guidance, and maybe Rooney is one of those players.
Andrew, final point. Do you think that Louis van Gaal needs to take a similar approach to Mourinho and that he dropped Terry, and arguably Terry is a bigger icon for Chelsea than Rooney is for United, and he dropped Terry, mm-hmm. So it's good enough for Terry to be dropped. Why is van Gaal not dropping Wayne Rooney?
No, I totally agree. I guess the problem is that United haven't got anybody else. There isn't a Van Persie anymore knocking on the door. There isn't another established striker.
Couldn't you play Martial there?
Pardon?
Couldn't you play Martial
no,
there?
No, I would. But I'm saying, other than a young Martial, there isn't another established player at the club that can also put pressure on Rooney, which he has been used to in his previous 10 years at the club.
Do Man United finish in the top four if you don't take Rooney out of the team?
I think we will.
Wow, what are you basing that on? What are you basing that? If you look at,
very now in the league, fourth now.
You're fourth now with Spurs a point behind you and Klopp looking like he's getting Liverpool going, right? You're saying you've drawn the last few games and Rooney isn't doing it. Do you think you can continue eking out results for the rest of the season?
I just think if United were to just play their players in right positions...
I'm saying if you keep to what you're doing now with Rooney up top, do you finish in the top four?
I think we still will.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Would you rate Natasha?
Their defence will probably make them make top four. Because I think for
Tottenham's defence isn't that poor. And if they get Kane scoring, Klopp will summon you.
Yeah, but Tottenham. Tottenham are going to do some Tottenham-esque thing at some point during the season. Like, they are. Like, we say with Arsenal, the injuries, it's just Arsenal, isn't it? So, it's just Tottenham. They're going to do some mad Tottenham-esque thing. Probably finish fifth. You know, everyone will get, I don't know, herpes the last day of the season or whatever. And they won't be able to play or win. Lukaku. Because even when he's not necessarily scoring, he does get assists and he does play other people in. And yeah, Bonny, if he's not scoring, he's not doing nothing much. And Benteke, he's very temperamental. But then he's not had a run of games since he's been at Liverpool.
Andrew?
Lukaku. He's a beast.
Yeah.
Look at the size of him. He just gives defenders trouble week in, week out. I like the player. And I think, I mean, he went to Chelsea already, but I still feel there's another big move for him in his career. I think he's got the ability to go to that next level and just sort of kill it. Yeah.
Who's second?
Benteke. Okay.
All right. Ollie?
I think this is a bit of an unfair question.
Why?
Well, because I don't really see that there's any competition at
the
moment.
So you're going to say Lukaku?
Well, yeah, because Benteke's been out injured and
if they're all on form, who do you
and Bonny's not really got going at Man City, is he?
We've seen them all have been on fire at some point.
Within the last year or so as well. Yeah.
Still Lukaku. Still Lukaku.
Yeah, I suppose it's Lukaku. But I'm not particularly kind of enamoured of any of them, really, to be honest. I mean, Benteke, we've spoken about Benteke. I just think that he's too in and out for me. You know, he's one good game and five bad ones, you know what I mean? And Bonny needs to prove that he can do it at a club like Man City, but he's never going to get a chance, is he? Because as soon as Aguero's fit, he's going to be back in the team. So, yeah, but I think some of that's to do with confidence. I think that when he was at Swansea, he was the main man, wasn't he? He's never going to be the main man at Man City, and he knows it. You know what I mean? They play to Aguero's strengths, and Aguero's the man.
Be top boy at City,
exactly. Aguero's any forward worth his salt, right? Any forward, for you to thrive in any team, right? You need to know you're the man. You know, the centre forward is the most important player in the team. He's going to win you games. You know what I mean? Everything has to go through the forward. You've got to play to that forward strengths. I don't really get that sense with Man City that they ain't having Wilfried Bonny. You know what I mean? They're not really. They aren't. I'm not saying there's a problem with him.
They're not playing for him to score. Yeah, they're happy for everyone else to score.
When he was at Swansea, they played to his strengths. He was the main man, and they played to make sure that he scored goals. You know, but it's not happening at Man City, and it won't happen for him at Man City because, as I say, Aguero's just too good. So he's always gonna have that problem.
Aguero clearly is the better striker there, but I think the point you're making is that even if Aguero wasn't there, they still wouldn't be set up to play well.
No, yeah.
Well, if Aguero wasn't there, they'd have another striker who would be as good as Aguero, who would still play ahead of Bonny. We're not doubting Bonny's ability, but his ability to lead the line for a top four Champions League side, we are doubting. I think that's where I'm coming from.
Yeah, I'm just doubting that he can kind of, you know, I think he's a good player. I do actually think he's a good forward, but I just don't know whether he's going to ever get that chance at Man City to to kind of be a top player there, because he's never going to be in the team long enough. In the back of his mind, he knows as soon as Aguero's fit, he's back in. He knows that. And Pellegrini's learnt from experience that he can't get away with playing two men up top. So it isn't going to be like the days when Dzeko was there, and he used to play sometimes with Dzeko up top. And Dzeko came at the beginning of that whole City journey, really. So Dzeko
was ingrained
in the whole City thing, and he came in and he did a job when he had to. You know what I mean? But Bonny's different. Bonny's come in on the back of it all, and I think it's difficult for him to kind of transcend all that. You know?
Do you feel that move was a bit too soon for him? Yeah, I mean,
For Bonny.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was too soon. I just think that he...
I mean, it was only a year or year and a half at Swansea. And then
I think Bonny and Remy were the stupidest moves. Because you've gone to effectively sit on the bench and be a number two striker. Both clubs play with one up top. We know how they play. You've not gone there to be the man or to challenge him.
I think Remy's more stupid than Bonny because
well, only because Aguero gets injured more.
No, because I think that Remy had other options, right? I mean, I know one of his moves fell down. Was it
his Liverpool?
Liverpool, it fell down with Liverpool, and they said he wasn't fit, or he failed a fitness test, or whatever it was. But he clearly wanted to go to a Chelsea and just sit on the bench. You know, he was happier to do that than go to another club where he would play regularly. But Bonny is slightly different. The other thing you've got to take on board with Bonny is that if a club like Swansea get offered 25, 30 million for him, it's not up to you anymore. Swansea ain't going to turn around and say... Swansea had already bought, as I said earlier, Swansea had already bought Gomez. They knew which way the wind was blowing. They knew that Bonny wasn't going to hang around, do you know what I mean? And that someone was going to come in for him. So they bought Gomez. They're like, when that £30 million is slapped on the table, they ain't going to turn around and say, well, no, we want to keep him. They're going to say, yeah, we're having him, or we're having that money all day long.
Here's your £50 for your taxi. See you later.
Exactly. Even if Bonny wanted to stay, they would have kicked him out the door. So, you know, I don't think he did anything wrong. He knew that he had to go. He'd probably become too big for the team. And he left. And I don't blame him for that. I think he's a good player. I actually think he would be a very good player. I'm not saying he can't play in a top four team. I think he could. But I just don't know whether Man City is going to be the club. Yeah, I don't think Man City is set up for him.
All right, let's move on. Before we get to our final topic, let's get to our pundit watch. We're going to discuss what we heard today, actually, from John Terry calling out Robbie Savage. I don't think anybody really raised Robbie Savage as a pundit here or outside of Fiat. He's just not very good. For those that don't know, John Terry did a press conference this afternoon ahead of the game, the Champions League game. I think the journalists, by what I'm told, asked the question, what do you think about the critics that have been criticising you and your team? And John Terry's response was that he thought it was fair from the start of the season, but some of the personal criticism of his performances he can accept from the likes of Rio Ferdinand, Jamie Carragher and Gary Neville, top players, but he won't have it from players who have had, to quote, played at a bad level and had no careers, the likes of Robbie Savage. Bonny.
It's going to still be good when I hear it in a week.
Did you agree with what John Terry said? And secondly, do you think that premise of his point was also correct? So, A, do you agree with him calling him out publicly like that? But do you agree with the point he's trying to make, which is that, mate, you didn't do anything as a footballer? Don't call me out, mate. Don't do that. I'm John Terry.
I do to some extent, because I think if you live by the sword, you've got to die by the sword. And I've heard Robbie Savage many times on 5 Live on 606 turn around to listeners who have phoned in, and his put down will be, well, you never played the game, so you don't know, you know, what you're talking about. I've played at the highest level. And in a similar way, he's now having a player who's played at the very highest level turn around to him and tell him, listen, mate, you won nothing in your career. You haven't played at the top level. I've played in World Cups. I've played in European Championships. I've won titles. I've won Champions League.
I'm not having it from you. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, it's what goes around comes around. You know, what comes around goes around, or whichever way around it is. Do you know what I mean? I always forget that one. But anyway, but the thing is that he's basically been slapped down by Terry, and in a way that he should understand, you know, in the way that he does sometimes when he's talking to listeners or people, the general public, who he kind of seems to think shouldn't have an opinion on anything,
and because they
haven't played
as well.
Because they haven't played the game, you know. It's and also with Savage, I heard Savage the other day on BT Sport, and he was on that Football Tonight program, and he was saying something along the lines, he was talking about Spurs. And he said something about, oh yeah, Spurs got a good chance of, they had a couple of Spurs fans on there. I think one of them was a guy from EastEnders and some other guy, I can't remember it was. I think it was a comedian. But anyway, he was saying to him, oh yeah, Spurs have got a good chance of finishing the top four, but you'll never win the league. And I thought to myself, yeah, but you never won the league either, Robbie. So what's your point here? Do you know what I mean? There's plenty of players, good players as well, who never win the Premier League, who never have a chance of winning the Premier League. So I don't really understand what his point is. Like, oh, but you'll never win the league. It's like, yeah, I could understand if you'd won it, but you haven't. And I don't really see the likes of Neville and Carragher and Ferdinand and whatever sitting there when they're doing their punditry saying these sort of things. And yet Robbie Savage seems to think that he's got the right to do that, to turn around and say these, you know, have these little put downs of, oh, well, you'll never win the league, or, you know, or you're not good enough, or to the general public, you know, you've never played the game. Do you know what I mean?
So, Andrew, is there a little bit of contradiction going on here now? Because everyone is kind of laughing with John Terry at Robbie Savage after today's press conference, because we would agree with Savage, probably, well, the narrative is that he wasn't in a position to kind of make the kind of claims he's making at people like John Terry because he was a nobody. But doesn't that kind of feed the kind of narrative that, well, hang on a minute, so what are we saying? We're laughing at John Terry for putting down Savage for not having a career, but yet we're saying that it's, you don't have to necessarily play at the top level to have an opinion on football. That's what John Terry's saying, really. He's saying, if you haven't played football at the top level, shut your mouth.
Yeah.
Whether you like Savage or not, yeah, personally, yeah, is a side issue. I think everyone dislikes Robbie Savage, but just because he's not won a World Cup or played in Champions League final, does he not have the right to call out John Terry?
You know what? Despite my reservations on Robbie Savage, I do agree with him. Mm. Whether he played at Hackney Marshes or Highbury or whatever, it's clear John Terry is off form and on the down.
And he should be allowed to say that, despite the fact that he was a nobody.
He's a pundit. It's his job. He has every right to say that.
Okay. And do you think he would have picked that same fight with Rio Ferdinand if Rio Ferdinand came on BT Sport and just blasted John Terry?
I think there's some sort of personal dig between the two of them.
Savage and Terry?
Yeah.
Terry and Rio.
Between JT and Savage.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's more to this than just...
Yeah, it's more to it.
Someone, because I was saying earlier off air, that I found it quite interesting that he referred to him by his name. He didn't just say, like, you know, there are some pundits on BT Sport that have been calling me out, but they should look at their own careers. He actually named him, Natasha. Do you feel that there's something there between the two of them? Anybody else, he wouldn't have named that person, but...
I think sometimes it's also not what you say, it's how you say it. So when people like Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher, we all agree, we all enjoy Monday Night Football because of the way they talk about the game. And when they explain why a player's doing something wrong, they don't make it personal. It's except for Eunice Kapoor, who they did absolutely slaughter the other month.
I didn't see it.
All. Yeah. But their comments are constructive. It's a case of he should be here, he should be doing this. And I think we would all agree that Robbie Savage does not add any sprinkles to the cake, shall we say. He'll just say John Terry's playing rubbish. You know, they conceded 3 goals. He's not going to sit there and go through why he's being rubbish or what he could do better. And I think probably John Terry's looking at that and like, yeah, so well, it's easy for you to say I'm rubbish, but why am I rubbish?
Well, he didn't say that. He just
I think he definitely felt Savage was being personal, yeah, because how long, I've never heard Terry call out anyone before, and there's been a lot of situations where he could have called people out, let's be honest. So for him to call him out like that, it's got to be he felt Savage was personal. Once you feel someone's personal to you, you're like, well, F it. Yeah, the gloves are off. But I don't buy this whole thing that you have to play the game at a specific level to be able to talk about the game.
Or at all?
No. Most of us might as well just go home now. But I do think because of how Robbie Savage is to people who haven't played the game, like Ollie said, and with certain journalists, which I've heard tales of.
He says it all the time.
And his attitude can be quite, I'm better than you. I think maybe John Terry was just reminding him, you think you're better than other people, but there's a lot of us that are better than you. So we should all know our place. I can't believe I just stuck up for John Terry. But yeah, I see where he's coming from. And I think Robbie Savage, his attitude is a bit high and mighty for someone who was part of the Derby team that... Was he part of the Derby team that was the worst Premier League team in history? So really and truly, glass houses and stones, isn't it?
I also think that there is something in it, you know, Jordan. I don't think it is just a case of, well, you know, I played at the top level and you didn't. The difference is that when you play at the top level like Terry does, it is big news when you're losing games. It's big news. When you're playing for Leicester and when you're playing for Derby and you lose games, nobody cares. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? I'm sorry, but nobody, it's not like, it's not like there's going to be like wall-to-wall Sky Sports news, oh, crisis at Derby, crisis at Leicester. It's like, well, that's the way it goes, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? If Leicester are losing, people, listen, I'm sure there's Leicester fans out there who want to see their team win every week, but we know that's not the case. Well, you know, that's not the point. The point is, right, that when you're playing at the level, I think there is a point to what he's saying. The point is, when you're playing for Man United, or when you're playing for Chelsea, or when you're playing for Arsenal, the pressure's different. You are expected to win every game. You are expected to beat teams. Robbie Savage could take a day off, I'm sure, when he's playing Leicester, right? He could have a bad game and no one would give two shits about it. Do you know what I mean? The point is that when John Terry has a bad game, everyone wants to know about it. Everyone wants to know when Chelsea are going through a crisis, because it doesn't happen often. If Chelsea are going through a crisis, everyone wants to know about it.
So because the pressures for people like Andrew, the pressures for people like John Terry are that much more heightened than someone playing at Robbie Savage's level, should pundits take that into consideration when they're criticising those players? Or it's essentially, if you're playing in League One and you're playing the Premier League, if you're playing rubbish, I'm going to call you out as playing rubbish.
I guess it is different pressure, isn't it? Yeah. I think when you are playing at that elite level, Champions League level, and you're out of form, the whole world knows about it. And I agree with Ollie's point as well.
Hang on, the prizes are greater. The prizes for playing good for John Terry were vastly better than the prizes that Savage were playing when he played good.
Yeah, but only the prizes are any better financially.
Well, not really. John Terry's got Champions League medals.
Yeah, financially in what medals and trophies you've got. But it doesn't mean that John Terry... that someone playing in League One and winning their title can't feel as good as John Terry feels about winning his title.
I don't back up Savage for a second here. Last year, I probably put good money on the fact that Savage, at some point, doing punditry for BT or whoever, would have said at some point that John Terry is the best defender in the league. He would have bigged him up when he was playing well. So why can't he call him out when he's playing poor?
I'm not saying he can't call him out. It's how Savage probably called. I mean, I don't...
Yeah.
I purposely... try not to watch anything featuring Robbie Savage.
Do we know exactly what Terry said, what Savage said?
No.
Because
based on previous experience.
Well, of course it does. Because if it's along the lines of what I've been hearing people say about John Terry recently, then I would be annoyed. If you're turning around and saying, well, I think John Terry's had it, you know? If I'm training every day, right, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, I'm not doing anything different. I'm having a bit of a bad spell, but, you know, I'm not doing anything. I'm still training hard. I'm still doing the same things I was doing last season when all of us picked John Terry in our team of the season, right? And, you know, you're saying, does it really happen that quickly? Does it really happen? I know people say, oh yeah, you know, one day you wake up, your legs are gone. I just don't buy that. I just don't buy that it happens that quickly. You're not like the centre half, one of the best centre halves in the country one season, and then the very next season suddenly you're gone. I don't buy that line. And I just, you know, and so the, you see, a lot of time, sorry.
So you do feel the fact that he's playing at a higher level and he was so good, that the changes in that quick, that should be taken into consideration when people are criticising him.
I just think that people just got to, I just think that it doesn't matter you're a pundit, I just think you've got to have some perspective. Have some perspective on it. Don't just, you look for, and too often we see with these pundits,
it's
they're all
personal.
It's personal, they're looking for the big line. This is what annoyed me about the Carragher thing a few weeks ago. It's the whole kind of, oh, it's a, you know, I'm going to say something there, and you know it's going to get run on Sky Sports News, and it's going to, you know, don't always be looking for the big line. Oh, John Terry's gone. You know, you say a little throwaway comment. Yeah. You have a little throwaway comment like that, right? But that would hurt. He's a professional, right? Whatever you think about John Terry, he's a professional, yeah? If I turn around to you and said in your line of work, oh, you're gone, you know what I mean? And I'm sitting there sort of telling you, oh, you know, you're finished, mate. You can't do your job. You would hurt you, you know what I mean? Yeah. You would be like, hold on a minute, you know what I mean? You want to lash out at someone. And I can understand exactly what he's saying, because he's basically turning around and saying, I can take that I'm not playing well from the likes of Rio and the likes of Gary Neville, who have been there and played.
He said people I've respected and looked up to, and I think that's a key thing.
I'm getting two different messages here now. Is it that he can take it from the likes of Rio, Neville and Carragher because they've achieved equal, if not more, than he has, or can he take it because they're giving perspective on his poor form? Which is it?
I think the achievement was the stick to beat Robbie Savage with, but I think it is the latter. I think naming those people was saying to Robbie Savage, well, look in your cupboard, because I know ours are all full. It was like we're saying perspective. It was, you have nothing, we all have something. So when they talk, I'll listen.
And so they dealt with the pressure.
Yeah, it was the stick to beat Robbie with. But I do think, I'm basing it on the way I've heard Robbie Savage talk about people before, and it ain't nice. And if he said it about me, I probably wouldn't do it in a press conference. I'd probably, you know, go meet him for a drink and we talk about it properly like adults. But... you know,
Robbie Savage is a player, right, who was at Man United. He was in that youth team with a class of 92, yeah? He didn't make it, right? He didn't make it. So Terry knows what he's saying. Essentially, you weren't good enough, mate. Either you weren't good enough or you weren't dedicated enough to make it, yeah? He's gone through it. He's done it. Gary Neville's done it, right? All them players have done it. They've played at the top level. They've dealt with the pressure of having to win every week. That is a different level of pressure than when you go and play for Leicester or Derby. I'm sorry, but that's the truth of it. And Robbie, as I said to you at the beginning, Robbie Savage should know that better than anyone, because he's always the one turning around and saying to the average phone, you know, the average Joe, you've never played the game, so what do you know?
Let's move on to our final topic now. The Aston Villa manager, Remy Gard, was announced a couple of days ago. Natasha, risk, or do you think it could prove to be a signing of genius?
Calculated risk, I think. Can they afford not to?
I think they can.
I mean, who really... this summer. Okay, so if you take a calculated risk... The two guys you would go for, Pulis and Allardyce, both in jobs. Yeah?
Alan Kerbishley.
Oh my God. Do you know what?
Every year.
Do you know what? That's true, you know. Normally he's like 100 to 1 on every betting.
Favourite for every job.
I know. I feel like I'm going to get a job before Alan Kerbishley.
What about your mate Brendan? He could have had the job.
Oh, boys.
Well, Brendan's on holiday in Spain, probably getting a tan to match his teeth. Moyes was...
You're laughing at me.
I'm sorry. Wow. Sorry. I've got to bring the girl perspective, innit? Moyes, I think, wants to prove that he can do it in Spain. I think for him, leaving would be like giving up. And I think he will come back when he's ready, not come back to fight for another club.
When Sociedad are ready to sack him.
back. Well, you know what I mean.
He wants to stay, but it might not be his.
Yeah. Stay. I don't know. Who else was there? I think...
I guess what I'm making is, I mean, Remy Gard
speaks
okay in French, in France. But surely there's someone in England that could do an equally, if not better, job than Remy Gard.
Who wants the job? You have to think... I can't think of a British manager, apart from Steve Evans, who would think Aston Villa is a good job right now.
I don't know. I
mean, all the young British managers are in good jobs at good clubs.
To salvage this season. We're not 10 games to go. There's enough time, you think, to try and salvage the Villa season.
But that's if you believe they have the players to do that. And if you don't, and if you're an Eddie Howe or a Gary Monk or someone like that, why are you going to leave your good job in a good, sensible, constructive club to go to Aston Villa, which is a club that has been topsy-turvy for the past 7 years?
Andrew, I heard the rhetoric this week that because he's French and they've brought all these French players in, that it will work because he can speak to them in French and he can get them going that way. I think it's the most nonsense justification I've ever heard for an appointment. Do you feel that just kind of surmises the club at the moment? They don't know what they're doing, where they're going. They're just hiring whoever's playing for the month at the moment for whatever reason.
They're all over the place. I mean, that comment from, is it Michael Richards saying that? I think he said that.
I think he said it second, but I think someone from the club actually came out when they were mooted to get the job. One of the reasons was he speaks French, he's French, so you know that might help with the club.
Yeah, it's a lazy one, and I think we heard that with Newcastle a few years ago when Pardew was there. I mean, obviously he doesn't speak French, but they're saying, there's a lot of French players in the club, so the players can bond well together in the dressing room. It doesn't matter. It's a calculated risk as well. I'm not sure about this move.
I don't know.
I'm not sure.
I was reading Martin Keown and Lee Dixon have been, obviously, because he was playing with Arsenal at that time. And they both said, you know, some players you always know they're going to go into management. He was one of those players from the time he came in. He was always learning from Wenger. He was always very analytical about the game and quiet. But when he spoke, it was constructive.
At that, if I'm a Villa fan, right, I'd be more concerned that I've got two ex-Arsenal people plus Arsene Wenger giving the yay or nay about whether we should get a manager in. I'd be looking at him thinking, hold on a minute, who's running this club? Do you know what I mean? Who is running this club? That can't be right. You know, I don't... Listen, I've got no idea whether Gard will be good or not. He might well turn out to be quite decent for them. I'd have got no idea. He did a decent job at Lyon. From what I've heard, most people in France think he's a good manager. And, you know, given a chance, he could do well. But I'd be concerned... If I'm a Villa fan, I'd be like, why is Arsene Wenger... dictating who our manager should be, and why have we got two people in the background, ex-Arsenal people, who basically a couple of months ago were telling me Tim Sherwood, he's the man. Now, I could have told you Tim Sherwood's not the man. I'm sure you could have told them Tim Sherwood's not the man, but they went down the road of getting Tim Sherwood in and thinking, yeah, he's all right. And they were like, you know, when he was getting them to the cup final, he was like, yeah, they're all patting each other on the back saying, yeah, Sherwood, what a fantastic appointment. Sherwood's running down the touchline, doing his stupid jigs and whatever, and everyone's thinking, yeah, he wears his heart on his sleeve, Tim Sherwood, what a great manager. Now, you know, a couple of months into the season, he's out the door. So I'm looking at him thinking, well, hold on a minute, these are the same people who were getting in Tim Sherwood and saying he was great, and now they're bringing in Remy Gard and saying he's the man, and he, oh yeah, we've bought a load of French players.